The National Nuclear Security Administration has a guide for predicting how much its large projects will cost, but the agency's project managers don't know they have it, and it's not all their fault. That's according to David Trimble. He's Director of Natural Resources and Environment Issues at the Government Accountability Office and looking at ways for NNSA to improve cost estimation processes. David, thanks very much for coming on the program this afternoon. What specifically did you look at here regarding how NNSA predicts the cost for the projects they'll do?
Yeah, we had two objectives in this study. The first was to look at to what extent the requirements that NNSA sets for how to conduct the cost estimates match up or follow best practices. GAO has a best practices guide for conducting cost estimates. So we compared the requirements and their guidance documents to the best practices. The second is we looked at the extent to which studies of their own projects and where they've had problems, whether the weaknesses they were identifying could be linked to not following these best practices.
And you write in this work that NNSA has a history of struggling to complete projects and programs within cost estimates. You go flat out from the beginning on this, David, and you write that their cost estimating requirements don't fully reflect best practices for developing these cost estimates. Which ones are they not following, and why are the ones that they not following causing the impact that they're causing, David?
Well, it's actually easier to say which ones they are following, because in terms of requirements, we found that they were only following one of 12 best practices for cost estimating that GAO has identified. And that one's an important one, but it's only one of the 12. And that dealt with having independent cost estimates performed on your project estimates, but the rest that were not reflected in their requirement document. So that's pretty significant.
You write, in contrast, the Energy Department's 2011 cost estimating guide describes recommended approaches for using 10 of 12 best practices and partially contains information about the other two. So this material is available. It's just that the people who are supposed to use it, as I mentioned in the beginning, either don't know it's available or are just choosing not to use it.
Yeah, that's correct. There's two problems. One is the requirements document, which is their project management order, does not contain a reference to the guidance document. So one, there's sort of a blind spot there. And then the second is a guidance document is a guidance document. It's not required to be followed. And in our work, we were told by some DOE contract or project managers that they were not passing it along to contractors because it wasn't being required. So clearly, if you have something that follows best practice, but no one has to actually follow it, it doesn't do you much good.
Yeah, it's kind of a circular reference there, but I see
right.
Exactly what you're talking about. You've got to get into that circle at some point if you expect this cycle to complete itself. And you present an example of one of the issues here. You write, in February 2014, GAO found NNSA's life cycle cost estimate for the plutonium disposition program didn't follow all key steps for developing high-quality cost estimates. What was the reason behind that example, and is that indicative of what you found as you looked at other situations?
Yeah, that's one of the things that we looked at in this report was we looked at both projects and programs, and that's important because people, the tendency has always been to look at the big projects, sort of the bricks and mortar, but those projects are part of a larger program. So, for example, plutonium disposition is, what are we going to do with the extra plutonium, excess plutonium we don't need that are in our weapons? So there's a program called MOX to build a facility to convert that into fuel for commercial reactors. That's great, but the project to build that facility is part of the larger program. So the project to build that plant costs about $8 billion, but the program's about $28 billion. Well, the issue comes in is that there's no requirements for cost estimating the cost of the entire program. So you're missing the forest for the trees. If you're just looking at the project, you never look at the bigger picture, which is multiple times the cost, you're missing opportunities to potentially save some money.
I want to walk back for a moment to the comment that you made a few minutes ago. You write, in the absence of a requirement for using best practices, it is unlikely that DOE, NNSA, and their contractors will consistently develop reliable cost estimates. I credit you and your colleagues at GAO, David, for using, shall we say, diplomatic language, but it strikes me that unlikely is maybe underselling it just a little bit. I mean, if you don't stick to best practices, that's kind of the point of having best practices in the first place.
Yeah, we would agree with you on that. I mean, you need to step up and make these best practices a requirement. And we have been on this issue. So, you know, the DOE has been on our high-risk list for its management of its projects and contracts since 1990. And one of the reasons we did this recent report is just to say, okay, we haven't seen as much progress as we would like. What are the root causes here? And this, I think, is starting to point to some of the root causes.
David Trimble of the Government Accountability Office is my guest, looking at costing at the National Nuclear Security Administration, part of the Department of Energy. The other element, as you talked about at the beginning of our conversation, David, is the way that NNSA project and program reviews are using cost estimating and finding weaknesses there. And you write that the reviews issued during fiscal year 09 to March 2014 identified cost estimating weaknesses that can be attributed to not following best practices. I guess the good news is that they are doing these reviews and they're finding these weaknesses. So maybe that's the silver lining in the cloud?
Well, it would be, except we're the ones to sort of connect the dots. I mean, that is, you're absolutely right. The good news is that they're doing reviews on the projects. We connect the dots to the lack of requirements to follow best practices. The other problem we found, however, is that there are no while there are requirements for project reviews on for projects, DOE doesn't have the same kind of requirement to do sort of a hot wash or after action review for programs. So while we can look and say, hey, we found all these project reviews and look at what we're seeing, since there are no reviews over programs at the programmatic level, we don't really know how well they're doing at the programmatic level.
All right, I'm going to throw a whole big pile of numbers at you, and if I get them all screwed up, I apologize in advance. So you looked at 50 reviews. You, among 39 of them, you identified a total of 113 cost estimating weaknesses. Can I derive from that in the other 11, you didn't find any cost estimating weaknesses, or am I reading that incorrectly?
That's right, and they could have been different. The purpose of the reviews could have, either the projects were fine and didn't have cost estimating problems, or the reviews had some other purpose.
Okay, so we'll focus then on those 39 for the purpose of this next question. 39 reviews, 113 total among them, cost estimating weaknesses. You found that 71 of those were because there were four best practices that were not followed. Tell me about those best practices, please, David.
Yeah, so those, I have to check on that one, but those are sort of gets to the heart of why you need to have all these best practices. One is, I think the one that I would focus on the most is one, having independence, and then also having an independent cost review, but also for uncertainty analysis, because this is, in this area in particular, it's very complicated. I mean, these are not simple. This is not sort of standard construction, right? So you've got a lot of uncertainty. You're dealing with a lot of very sensitive material, and if you're not doing the type of uncertainty analysis that you need to do, your cost estimates will never be reliable. You have to have some range to let decision makers know, sort of quantify in meaningful way the uncertainty each project is facing.
Uncertainty analysis is a term that I'm not familiar with. Can you tell me what that means?
So if you're providing an estimate and a key driver of your cost is labor, and say there's a nuclear renaissance going on, so you're competing in the private sector for a lot of labor that is also building commercial power reactors. Over a 10-year period, a 5 or 10% change in that labor market could dramatically affect your ability to complete the project on time and on schedule.
I see.
And so you need to quantify that in your estimate.
Your report says neither DOE nor NNSA requires reviews of program cost estimates. Why is that a problem?
Well, because that's really where we're talking about the biggest chunk of money. So in my plutonium disposition example, building the building for the MOX project is about an $8 billion endeavor. But the program itself has about a $26 billion cost. So you have to keep sort of the end game, the real big picture here in your sights. Otherwise, you're going to sort of lose the forest for the trees. You could build the project very well, but if your program costs, because of operation and maintenance or other costs that through the life cycle of that program escalate, you could easily bankrupt your agency.
So, yeah, nobody wants that. You said something a moment ago that strikes me as particularly interesting, David. You remarked about the complexity of these projects and programs that NNSA administers.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if that means that the best practices more broadly for this kind of program or project still apply in a unique case like this, or because they're best practices wherever on the landscape they apply.
They're absolutely, they apply regardless of the landscape. And I would argue that in a complex, difficult contracting environment, they would apply even more, because you need the controls and the safeguards that those best practices embody in everything you do.
A couple of recommendations that you make here, four to be precise, and tell me about those.
Well, they're pretty sort of obvious when you go through the problem. So one is to incorporate the best practices into your project management order. Incorporate the best practices fully into your guide. Make sure your order reflects the guide. Have the best practices apply to programs, and also make sure that there's a requirement to do program review so you know how well you're doing at the programmatic level.
When you say that those independent reviews should be conducted periodically, do you have a prescription for that, or is that up to the agencies to decide?
That would be up to the agencies to decide. I mean, that's going to, you know, there's a lot of different rhythms to different types of projects, and so it would be up to the agency to figure out how to best incorporate that.
But as long as they're going back at some point in time on a regular and ongoing basis and looking at what's going on, you're satisfied with that.
Right. You're right. I mean, it's basic good governance. It's like you have a program, you're spending money. How are you doing? You have to know how well you're operating.